You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Today I was going to elaborate as to where public opinion is regarding the whole immigration area. But before I get into that, there are two breaking stories that are in the news. One is really very recent. The Israeli Defense Forces have launched operations in Gaza, primarily jet fighter aircraft initially, as well as artillery fire going into Gaza. They have been fired upon by Hamas's forces launching rockets into Israel. So this was not to be this was not unexpected, and we'll probably be getting more information as the operations continue. They started it. It's nighttime in Israel, and there are some news stations that are showing video of the attack, and you can see some of the damaged areas in terms of fires. So there'll be more news tomorrow on that. The important thing here is Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, and I really think the Obama administration has gone out of its way to, what's the best way to put this, distance the United States from Israel? Now, they'll deny that, but I always thought and still believe that President Obama has an animus against Israel. And that can be traced back to his professors at Columbia University, one of them being a Palestinian. So it hasn't really turned out very good for the administration. I think his foreign policy is a disaster. The so-called Arab Spring has turned into the Arab disaster or chaos, or maybe we should call it the Arab winter. We have the Middle East, whether it's in Syria, whether it's in Libya, Iraq, is going up in smoke, literally going up in smoke. So the success of the U.S. foreign policy, there isn't any. There are no real achievements here. There's no peace in the Middle East. And we've replaced or had replaced one regime with other regimes that are actually worse, whether it's in Libya or in Egypt. So there's nothing really there to brag about or trumpet. I don't think there's a legacy there. Yet Hillary Clinton looks like she's running for president. I have no doubt she is. I have questions about her health. I have questions about what's the record there in terms of achievement. And I don't see any. Maybe you do, but I don't. Traveling on a jet, racking up miles and miles might be impressive to some people, but I'm of the opinion that you look for results, and I scratched my head and said, well, where are the results? You know, it reminds me of what happened when her husband was president, and she was given the task of leading the task force on health care reform, and that didn't work out either. So she doesn't seem to have a golden touch in terms of turning whatever project she takes on into success stories. Now, the other news story that's breaking, and we'll get more information on it, is the Malaysian airline the flight number is MH17. It had 280 passengers on board and 15 crew. It took off from Amsterdam on its way to Malaysia flew over Germany, Poland, and Ukraine, and over the Ukraine. U.S. intelligence sources are indicated it was shot down by a surface-to-air missile, and 295 people are dead. Because it was flying at 33,000 feet, and I need to make a point of this, there are not many surface-to-air missiles that are going that have really long-range altitude capability, but the Russians have them, as does the United States. And the system most likely responsible for this is called a BUK, and they I have pictures of this, and I need to point this out. I have a companion blog to my radio show, and that's pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And what I usually do, first for new listeners, at the very top I have links, because most of my listeners listen to the show via podcast. And the way you do that is just click on the links at the top. At the very, very bottom of the page, I have links to all my past shows, except for the first seven that were accidentally deleted. So you have my complete portfolio, and any show you're interested in, you can listen to. Most people that listen to the show will, or is it a result of first going to a search engine and finding out there is a radio or podcast on a topic of interest, and that's how they usually get to the site. But on the page, besides the link to the show and shows, plural, there's information, includes photos, maps, articles, cartoons. It depends on the story and what I'm writing about, as well as articles, YouTube videos. And I point that out because both of these stories, both the shooting down of the airliner, are breaking, so you're not going to get much in terms of videos. I was actually surprised. I got quite a few, so I point those out. There's a certain amount of repetition. And the one thing I will say, because I've covered many of these breaking stories before, the early hours and even the first few days, the information is unreliable. It's hard to get confirmation on them. The professional journalists are quick to point out they can't confirm. Neither can I, for example, can't confirm they're 295 dead, but given the fact that 280 passengers were on the flight and there were a 15 crew, stewardesses as well as the flight crew, the air crew, and that's a long flight, if that plane was shot down by at 33,000 feet, it broke up into pieces, and the chances of survival are almost none because they're not equipped to, first of all, detect the missile launch as well as evade it. So if a surface-to-air missile such as the BUK, it's a Soviet weapon, the Soviet Union used it, and it was designed when the Soviet Union existed. The Russians still have it. It's not clear whether the Russians gave these missiles to the pro-Russian resistance, however you want to call them, in Ukraine. Separatists, I guess, is another way you could describe them. Now, the Russians in the Ukraine are denying they fired it. Someone fired it, and U.S. intelligence said it was a missile that brought this airliner down. You better believe the United States has satellites doing reconnaissance over that area and getting rather real-time updates. So I'm not surprised that the United States has that information. And Putin had a conversation with President Obama today and apparently was making him aware of what information he has. Now, the Russians are denying it. The Ukrainian government is denying it, as well as the pro-Russian separatists in the Ukraine are denying it. No one is going to really own up to this. Now, the one thing I thought about this, I said, you know, if I were flying from Amsterdam to Malaysia, I wouldn't want my flight to go over the Ukraine at all for the simple reasons large portions of the Ukraine are being contested. It's a war zone, and you already had several military aircraft brought down. So it's dangerous for any airliner to fly over that area, even at 33,000 feet, because this missile system can shoot down aircraft up to 72,000, which is more than twice the flight altitude of this Malaysian airline flight, MH17. And now rather closing the barn door after the horse is out, a number of airlines now are rerouting all their flights around this area. Well, it's about time, but sometimes that's what it takes. Many people have to lose their lives, and then the airliners take what I thought they should have been taking all along. I'm not trying to Monday morning quarterback this, but you've already had several, helicopter, military transport plane with significant loss of life in this area, the general area of the Ukraine that's being contested. If that's a war zone. And I don't think you should send airline flights over war zones, even if it's at 33,000 feet, because you're always going to run the risk someone's going to make a mistake. They might think it's a military transport. They might think it's a jet because of its speed and altitude, and shoot it down. Now, the question is, did the Russians shoot it down, or did the Russians give this equipment to the Russians that are in the Ukraine? I don't think, we might eventually find out, but I don't really think they're going to admit it. And there have been previous airliners shot down. I believe this is the fourth. And I don't want to get into that history, but the Russians have brought down a jet fighter, brought down a Korean Airlines flight that was carrying a congressman and some other Americans as well. So it's not like it is unprecedented, although it's not a common occurrence. And I do want to express my condolences to the families of those passengers and flight crew. And this is the second Malaysian airliner that has been one that was missing, that was CNN, for example, I think really covered it, initially did a good job in the coverage, but they wouldn't let it go and went on and on and on, where you had no news. I think where you have new news about a story, yes, you definitely should publish it. You have an obligation to publish it. But there's a point where when you're not getting any information and you haven't for weeks, you don't continue to lead with the story. I don't think they're going to do it again, but who knows? They might think that this is their way to get ratings. CNN has really lost a significant ratings. They are slightly above MSNBC, but that's not saying much. So I'll give you an update tomorrow if there's some additional information. If there isn't, I won't. But you'll be hearing a lot about both what's happening in Israel in terms of the Israelis launching their ground operations as well as air operations. And they recognize where Hamas, which is allied with Iran, and they get their missiles from Iran, attack them, they are going to attack back, as would the United States if they were attacked. Both stories are breaking. There are going to be developments in it, new information, and I'll keep you posted. But both, I think, are illustrative of, unfortunately, the failures of the Obama administration in the foreign policy areas. After saying that, I recognize that most American citizens simply do not follow, nor are they interested in what's happening in other countries. I am, and I will give you information if I think the story's important enough, but most Americans are more concerned as to what is happening in the United States. Now, I've had a couple of shows recently that dealt with the upcoming elections in November of this year, as well as what do you do if neither a Republican or a Democratic candidate shares your political philosophy, or you don't trust the candidate? Well, the problem is the American people only have two choices. Both political parties have made it virtually impossible for any third party to get elected to office. First, even if you started a third party, it would be difficult to get on the ballot. That would cost money. But what I'm concluding, we need definitely need a third party, and that will be happening in the not-too-distant future. And what I mean by that, probably 5-10-year time period. We need it sooner, but until independents, for example, and that's the fastest-growing party affiliation, and the Gallup poll, for example, and I was a little low in the numbers I gave in the show, but a recent poll, and they do this, I believe, weekly, show that independents had 45% in terms of party affiliation when they asked people, are you a Republican, or are you a Democrat, or are you an independent or other? So they are the number one party affiliation. The problem is it's not a party. You can say you're an independent, but you're going to be voting either for a Democrat or a Republican. Now, there are at least two dozen other third parties, so-called third parties, but they get such a small percentage, usually less than a percent of the vote, they're not really a factor. And the conventional wisdom, and I've heard it once, I've heard it 100 times, is you're throwing your vote away should you vote for a third party. And third parties are so-called spoilers. If you vote for the third party, you might as well vote for the opposition, because the spoiler's not going to win, but he could take votes from, let's say, the Republican Party, for an example. So don't waste your vote. And to the extent that you do vote for a third party, you're really voting for the opposite of what you really want to do. That's sort of the conventional wisdom. And for many, many years, I agreed with that, but I finally got fed up with it. I said, you know, you only live so long, and I don't see anyone that reflects my political philosophy, for example, running for president of the United States. I'm a strong believer in limited government and a non-interventionist economic policy, as well as a non-interventionist foreign policy. And I, with the one president I would support, I wasn't born then, and that was Calvin Coolidge, who left office in 1930, could have run for a second term, but he chose not to run. If he had, he would have won in a landslide. So the only president that really comes close to my political philosophy is Ronald Reagan, but I had some issues or reservations about Reagan, especially regarding the size of the deficits he ran up. And I understand the Democrats controlled the House and for several years the Senate as well, but that doesn't mean he can't veto the bills. You see, and that's what a president has to do, where you have either gridlock or your opposing party controls both houses. You got to have the courage to issue a veto after veto after veto if they really don't reflect what you think should be done. A lot of presidents simply won't do that, Republican or Democrat. But that's what needs to be done, and unfortunately it's not. So I have had several shows, and I'm pointing this out for new listeners, on both what do you do if neither party is your cup of tea, as well as what would be the leading issues for the so-called midterm elections. An election day is November 4th, the first Tuesday of November of this year. What most people do is, for example, I'm a classical liberal. I won't vote for a Democrat. They're beyond the pale. I will look at which Republican is on the ballot, and if it's someone who I at least could generally support, I'll vote Republican. Not that I want to, and I certainly won't vote a straight ticket, vote for all Republicans. But what many independents are doing is staying home. Staying home. And now, the conventional wisdom there is, well, if you stay home, you're throwing your vote away. I don't think so. I don't think so. You see, politicians listen to one thing, and their primary concern is to get reelected. And even though they have the so-called incumbent advantage, where roughly 90 to 95% of the time the incumbent gets reelected, only a small percentage of the time does a new challenger first get nominated in the by a party in the primaries and then defeats the incumbent in the general election. In other words, it's very, very rare or very difficult for anyone to defeat an incumbent. It can be done and is done, but you need to recognize that. And it's really, you got to run two races. First, you got to get the nomination. And one difficulty there, for example, and many Tea Parties have found it, they have to defeat the choice of the party, both on the local and state level as well as national. And that's why I think many Tea Party people that support the Tea Party, that are libertarians, and they can identify, self-identify, however they want, but if you do a little probing questioning, you'll find that they are libertarians. They believe in balanced budgets. They believe in a lot smaller government. They really want to be left alone, and the government simply won't leave them alone. Good example of that is Obamacare. I would say 80 to 90% of the American people were perfectly happy with their existing health insurance coverage. Was it perfect? Absolutely not. Nothing's ever perfect. And there's always room for improvement. But what you had is a bunch of statist collectivists that think they know better than you do. And they designed Obamacare with these new plans that are a lot more expensive. And one of the reasons they're more expensive, they've included services or benefits in 8 and 10 categories. And many of these services people simply don't want, but you have to pay for them. And that's the problem. I used to sell group health insurance as well as individual insurance. And you had a lot of flexibility there, and it depended what the customer wants. Some customers want the best coverage they can possibly afford with a very good company. Others just want something. And what they mean by that, okay, I don't want to pay more than fill in the blank dollars a month per employee. And that's how they approach it. It's not the best approach, but I just want something. Well, where you constrain it by also specifying the maximum amount of money you are willing to spend on your employees, that quickly narrows the range of alternatives. Sometimes you still can get excellent coverage with a good company, but other times there's really no good company and the plans are not the best. I understand that. But what happened with Obamacare, the premiums are a lot higher, and what I mean 50 to 100% higher. The deductibles are 3 to 4, in some cases 5 times higher than what either the individual or small group had. So that's just one example of government intervention where the Washington elite, what I call the political elitist establishment, they truly believe they know best, that you can't make a rational decision. Well, if that's true for individuals, I think that's also true for committees. I think the individual is in the best position to determine what he or she can afford, not some government bureaucrat that has no appreciation of the number of plans out there and the desire of people to match a plan with their budget. Because if they did, they wouldn't have come up with these plans. So Obamacare is definitely going to be an issue, but it is a good example of where Washington is saying, we know best, or the bureaucracies and the politicians in Washington have that attitude. It's an elitist attitude. It's an establishment attitude. They're for the status quo, but what they really want to do is control you and me. That's what it's about, folks. It's about control, and it's about being dependent on the federal government. And that is truly what they're doing, forcing you to take one of these plans if you're an individual and don't have coverage through your employer. And what they've done is made exemptions and delaying the implementation of some of the other areas until really President Obama is out of office. You see, they don't have the confidence, nor will they stand up to the fact that they're responsible for these Obamacare plans that people don't like. They don't like the premiums. They don't like the deductibles. They don't like the fact that they can't really choose their doctor. And they're upset. And I'd be upset. And they can't choose their both doctor and hospital. And there's a rather limited number of doctors to choose from. And they thought, President Obama said, and they were correct, he did say it, that a family of four would on average reduce their premiums by $2,500. Well, it's actually just the reverse of that. So you have a lot of American people that, for lack of a better word, are outraged at what the federal government is doing to them. They really feel put upon, and they don't like it. And I think what you're going to see this November is a big backlash against the Democratic Party. Now, I could be wrong, but I do have a sense of what's going on, and it's not good. Because if people truly were not forced to, or steered, or manipulated, however you want to characterize it, to buy a certain plan, in other words, they had a lot of flexibility, they would never buy these Obamacare plans. So I think you're going to see a so-called wave election where the turnouts will be much higher than normal. And why some want to punish the Republicans, most will really want to punish the Democrats. And what I mean by that, they're going to throw them out of office. And it doesn't matter what committee or what tenure they have, they're disgusted with them. And that's the appropriate reaction, where you believe that the person you elected and sent to Washington, either as a representative in the House of Representatives or a senator in the Senate, are not representing your point of view, then I think you're perfectly entitled to throw the bum out. And I call them a bum because they misled you. But that's easier said than done. And why do I say that? Most people have lives. Most people have interests or passions or avocations. What I'm trying to say is most people are simply not interested in politics. Don't follow it. It could care less. They have a job they have to worry about. They have a family they have to worry about. And to the extent that they have spare time, they devote it to either sports, movies, games, reading. There's a whole long list of things that they can do instead of listening to talk radio or try to follow what's going on in Washington. And the politicians are aware of this. So as much as they might be acutely aware that there is a backlash coming, I really don't think they think it's going to be what I called a wave or tidal wave election, in the sense that many, many Republicans will be replacing Democrats. As of today, I would say the House will remain in Republican control. I don't think they're going to expand their control by many seats, but I need to say that. And as far as the Senate, I think the Republican Party will have a number of gains there. But as of right now, I think they'll get 52 Senate seats will be Republican, and the other 48 will be Democrat or Socialist. So that's not going to be a big change. It is somewhat a change for the better, because if the Republicans control both the House of Representatives and the Senate, maybe not everything we or you would want can get passed, but you have a much better chance of getting a bill through Congress. But then you face the big hurdle, and the big hurdle is the president has to sign it. And remember, the president, especially after this election, is not up for re-election. I don't think he would, even if he could run for a third term, I doubt seriously he wants it. I distinctly get the impression that he'd rather be playing golf or basketball. Like I said, people have other lives, even the president. And I really think that's where his heart is at. He'd rather be playing. Not really ruling, but playing. And at this point, I think what he's focused on, and will even be more focused on after this election, is his legacy. What will he leave to history? Because as of right now, I really think his economic policies have been failures, especially his fiscal policy in terms of budgets. And that's bad in and of itself. If you look at the deficits and the increase, and that leads to increase in debts, it's a disaster. And it hasn't resulted in a robust recovery. We still haven't gotten back to the high point in terms of employment, which was for the United States in November of 2007. We're still several hundred thousand, I believe it's over 400,000 jobs below that. Ladies and gentlemen, that's terrible. By now, I would have thought we would at least be somewhere between 4 and 5% in terms of the unemployment rate, and ideally below 3%. We're nowhere near there. We're at 6.1. And later this month, I'm afraid we're going to hear the news that we're back into a recession when the economic statistics for the real gross national product or gross domestic product, GDP, come out. The last week of July will give us the first or advanced estimate for GDP, and I think we'll get another quarter of negative or shrinking of the economy in term as measured by GDP, real GDP, which is the final sale of goods and services. So there's a lot of bad news, and I think this is truly hurting the Democratic Party. Now, they could still pull it off because we still have about 100 days. Let me count out loud. We have August, September, and October, so that's 92, plus 3 before Election Day, that's 95. So we have over 105 days, 106 days to the election, and things can change. But right now, it looks like the Obama administration is in a world of hurts. Because there's a number of things going on that really could damage this president and really turn off the American people to him. Now, many are already turned off. And what I mean by that, they simply don't trust anything this president says. And I joined that club rather early because I never would vote for him. And I can remember when he started a lie in the September-October timeframe of 2008. Up to then, it was more hope and change and sort of a inspiring to some message. But when it got closer to the election, he took the gloves off, if you will, and started to make statements that really were misrepresentations of what's going on, what are more commonly referred to as lies, and he's continued that into the present. And what happens is people that really supported him, once they understand that he's not telling the truth, he's not being honest with the American people, they turn him off. The crowds are getting smaller, and people are simply don't want to listen to him. Another way to say this, there are a couple of ways to express it. President Obama has a character problem or an integrity problem. That's a somewhat diplomatic way to say he lies. And when you're dealing with a liar and people catch on to that, they don't want to listen to you. They cringe at having to listen to him, any of his speeches. They turn him off. They literally turn him off. They switch channels. And there's been a lot of switching of channels when it comes to Barack Obama. He has a big credibility problem. People don't believe what he says. You know, take an example, and again, this is from his spokesman, his White House press secretary. He was asked by one or two reporters, why aren't you providing information as to what's happening in the various detention centers? And why aren't you notifying, for example, governors or mayors of cities when you're shipping in or transporting in these illegal alien children from the various border states into other states? You would think the only courteous thing to do would be for the president to get on the phone and talk to the governor or city where these illegal alien children are going to and tell them what's going on. Well, they're not doing that. And when the press secretary was asked about it, he said, well, the reason we're not, there was a privacy issue. Although we want to be transparent and forthcoming, there's a privacy issue. When I heard that, I scratched my head. I said, excuse me, telling a governor or a mayor that you can expect, let's say, 1,000 illegal alien children coming to your state or city, what's the privacy issue there? You're not telling the names of these people. You're not giving them any information as to their ages or backgrounds. It's not like a governor or mayor really wants to know the names of these people, but it's simply a matter of courtesy to give whoever, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, a heads up that the federal government will be sending in a number of people that are not here legally. In other words, they're under 18. Most of them are between the ages of 10 and 8 and under 18. They're teenagers. And because they are, they fall under the so-called William Wilberforce human trafficking law, which means it takes considerably more time to deport them if they don't come from a country that's contiguous with the United States. Namely, they don't come from Mexico or Canada, and most of these, the surge in children, come from Central America, primarily Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. So technically, by the law, Obama's correct in saying, well, the law says, here's the procedures. Now, what's wrong with that argument? This law was designed to stop human trafficking of children, primarily used in either prostitution or sex or strip clubs, for example, but they were children. And in the past, it usually was 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, as high as 8,000 were the number of children we're talking about. It fluctuates from year to year, and those were the numbers. And yes, it took longer because they had to have an immigration hearing. One of the problems is these children get, I'm just looking at the time, I really get it. I did not get into what I really was going to talk about, the polling information. So to make a long story short, the president is saying, well, this is the law, and because of that, it's going to take a long time for us to deport these children. The problem is the American people believe this crisis was caused by the president, and he doesn't want to deport them. There's no desire to deport them because they know, as well as the Border Patrol knows, the people in the government that follow this know, once these children get what's called a notice to appear, commonly referred to as a run letter, they never show up in immigration court. 90% of them never show up. They're gone. So what is the president doing? He's aiding and abetting illegal aliens getting into the country. And once they're given a ticket, let's say from South Texas to Dallas, and many of them are Irving or the Dallas-Fort Worth area, they never show up at immigration court in Dallas. And you don't know where they are. And to compound the mistake, the way this is being handled, they're giving them to illegal aliens. You see, the president doesn't want to enforce the law. And that is what he swore an oath to do. And the American people are upset about it. And poll after poll are showing they want the deportation of illegal aliens, including these children. And they want it done as soon as possible, like maybe in a week or two. Not months, not years. I say this because this immigration is fast becoming the number one concern of the American people and will be a major election issue come November. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You have been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with the voice of Richland College. Thank you for listening. And tomorrow I'll give you some more updates about those breaking news stories that I covered earlier in the show. Have a great day.